baseball trade deadline is only 3 days away, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, whatever it is, 72 hours away. And we have, probably not even good math. I don't know. My math is not my thing. John Morosi is here to lay it all out. MLB Network's John Morosi. First of all, before we do anything, Macklin Celebrini signing a major contract with San Jose Sharks. To me, very worthwhile, but only if they add other pieces to it. Am I wrong?
I agree with you, Pete, but here's what I'll say about the Sharks is they've already started the adding. They have had, even in addition to Celebrini, some very good drafts in recent years, including this year, to where they already have an excellent group of young talent. This is now, in a lot of ways, a young person's NHL, where you can be a very young player, as you witnessed with Celebrini, now the highest paid player in the NHL, and then Matthew Schaefer with all he did for the Islanders. This is an era where having a very young roster can be a very good thing, and the Sharks, it's not just Celebrini, it's Misa, Dickinson, of course, were in the same draft class not long ago. They've got a lot of talent right now in San Jose. So I think they've already added to it. They'll keep adding, and this is going to be a very dangerous team. I believe it's now that next generation. You talk so much about the days of yore with Burns and Thornton and Couture and that group. I think now it's a new group now.
Now, if they only can get a goalie, that would be nice, because I think what was the goals against last year was like six. It feels like at least. But John Morosi joining us. We're not talking hockey, but I had to get that off my chest because when I saw that the other day, I was like, I like it. It's a good move. He's unbelievable. But again, it's about the focus of the New York area with the Mets and the Yankees, because you have two teams in different worlds right now. You have the Yankees, who are by far the best team in the American League, even though the record doesn't say it, with the Tampa Bay Rays. And then you got the Mets with one of the worst records in baseball, looking to shed as much as possible. I asked someone earlier who's close with the team, with the Yankees, Emmanuel Babari. He said he'll never see a trade of Lindor to the Yankees. But you talk about a shortstop position that the Yankees are craving for. They have George Lombard Jr., but you're telling me that there's nothing they could do to make a deal for Francisco Lindor? It's beautiful. It's perfect. It's lined up. The stud of the Mets going to the Yankees and bringing a championship back to the Yankees. I mean, that'd be amazing.
If Lindor was the only option at shortstop in the industry right now, then I could see it. It'd be complicated, but I could see it. There are, though, a few issues with this. Number one, Zach Neto is a cleaner fit, if you look at it. He's not owed as much money. He fits into the existing leadership structure at a lower point. Let's say Lindor comes over, all of a sudden he's now one of the principal players on that team, and how does he fit in with the structure of Judge and Bellinger? I realize they're on the injured list right now, but it gets a little crowded in that room from that standpoint. I would also say Otto Lopez fits this team in a little bit of a better and cleaner way, just from the standpoint of the roster and the money, than Lindor would. So it's a lot of money. And then you start to wonder, if the Yankees are not going to take on the entire salary, then you've got the Yankees and Mets trying to divvy up who's going to take what percentage. That seems way too complicated to me in terms of how the deals could get done between those two teams. Again, I get it from a baseball standpoint. I agree the Mets would benefit from no longer having Lindor's contract. I understand that, and maybe at that point it becomes fully Soto's team, and some of those other leadership dynamics that we've talked about a lot this year start to melt away. I just think the Yankees can go to other places to address their shortstop issues and their overall infield production issues without taking on some of the inherent complexities of acquiring Lindor from across town.
Now, you talk about Zach Neto being one. But it seems like, even though he still has service time and whatnot, there's still like 3 or 4 years of control with him. You may have to, if you're the Yankees, you may have to give up big level prospects that you're not as willing to do in the past. Are the Yankees going to, and especially in a year where they could win the whole thing, they can get to the World Series, and you don't know what's going to happen to Judge. Do they have to almost act like Judge is not coming back?
So here are a couple thoughts there. Number one, I do think that as hard as this is to say, you have to look at the contributions of Judge in September and perhaps even October as being a bonus. You can't really plan just based on how much time he's missed and how long it's been and just the uncertainty surrounding the injury itself. It's really hard to plan on a particular level of production when a player's been out for that long, whether it's Aaron Judge or anyone else. For that reason, you have to look at addressing the outfield, too, at least getting some more outfield production because, again, now Bellinger's out. Stanton, obviously, has had a lot of injury issues, too. So I do agree with the premise that you're offering, Pete, that you would have to give up from one of the higher levels of the organization, but you may also be able to make some progress by moving on from some players that it doesn't appear to me, especially a Spencer Jones, for example, that he hasn't really had the opportunity in the runway to become a consistent part of this team, and it may not happen for him in New York. I agree with the premise that it'd be really hard to trade Lombard for a shorter-term player, but they also have to realize that Lombard, if you keep him, he doesn't have to be the shortstop. He could play elsewhere in the infield. If you get a true shortstop who's already proven it at the major league level, which is exactly what Neto is, I think a lot of the rest of the lineup starts to make sense. I would also add this. I would like to see, especially when you consider the fact that the Yankees have some different DH options at the moment, why not get Gleyber Torres back from the Tigers? You know he hits in New York. It's a great right-handed bat. He's been in the playoffs before. He's been in the World Series before. I think Gleyber Torres is a really good fit for this team, especially as you realize that maybe Jazz Chisholm won't be on this team in 2027.
Does that mean that you're trading Jazz or you're just adding to the roster?
I think you're adding right now. I think there's, to me, I would say this, Pete, the Yankees are in no position to trade away healthy position players at the major league level. They don't have enough of them to do that.
Right.
So I think you certainly can make some moves from your minor league depth, I would say. But the one thing I'll say, too, though, is that typically the Yankees have been in a situation this time of year where they've been desperate or really aggressive in needing to add a top-of-the-rotation starter, a 1-2 or 3 starter. If they're healthy, and we expect them to be reasonably healthy in the rotation, they've got as good of a 1-2-3 or 1-2-3-4, if you want to say it, as anybody in baseball. I mean, when they're all really going. So you're never going to cross off the possibility of getting a starting pitcher. It's just not their biggest priority right now. You're looking at offense behind the plate, offense at shortstop, certainly some more swing and miss in the bullpen. But what a luxury, Pete, that the Yankees don't really have to worry about adding an ace-level starter at the deadline.
No, it's amazing. And again, we're being joined by John Morosia, MLB Network. You talked about their pitching is unbelievable. I mean, they might have the best rotation in baseball. I know that the Dodgers are up there. They have an amazing one. But now that Otani is not pitching, they take a little bit of a hit. But again, when healthy, Yankees are up there. But that doesn't mean that they can't go and get a Tarik Skubal, because you think about the big names, that are out there right now. Well, Tarik Skubal, Mason Miller is probably off the list now, it sounds like, with the Padres, but you can't tell. Every other day it shifts. There's a couple days left to this trade deadline, so who knows what's going to happen. But I would think the Yankees are in on all the big names, no?
They are, and I think everything, of course, this time of year is a question of price. The Yankees will want to add an upgrade wherever they can in their overall roster, but it's a question of priority and then where you're going to allocate your assets. I just think that the more pressing need, especially when you think back, Pete, to last year and the way the series went against the Blue Jays, there were some winnable games in that series, and runs were at a real premium, and they just never really got that offense going, especially when you think about how they lost it at Yankee Stadium there in Game 4. They just didn't have enough sock in that lineup. And even you even go back to the Dodger World Series and how that played out. They could not do enough to execute against good pitching. And so that's where I would focus on. Again, I very intentionally mentioned Gleyber because he is someone that's been in the playoffs multiple times. You start looking at the lineup and the bench options or the platoon DH options or any other options around the infield. If you have a big late-game situation and you could have Gleyber Torres up or Spencer Jones or Jason Dominguez to get a base hit and drive in a run, I would want Gleyber Torres up 10 times out of 10. Mm-hmm. Because I believe with that veteran savvy, and this is where, to me, we spend a lot of time in baseball now talking about the analytics. And it's, listen, they have a place. But how many times do we see the teams that win the World Series, they get contributions from their best complementary players who are used to delivering in those situations in October? The Yankees are a playoff team. They're going to be a playoff team. They are not going to fall out of a spot. So you can look at it and say, listen, what do we need to do to get from game one of the playoffs all the way to game seven of the World Series? And you know what? Right now, the Los Angeles Dodgers are the reigning champions in Major League Baseball because of Miguel Rojas, because of Kike Hernandez, because of Andy Pages. Yes, Ohtani played a role in that. But they win Game 6 and Game 7 because of what their role players did. When the Nationals won the World Series, it was because of Howie Kendrick and Adam Eaton and Patrick Corbin. You got to find the right depth pieces who you know can execute in the playoffs. And I believe that is the task before Brian Cashman and the New York Yankees right now.
John Morosi joining us right now on MLB Network. You know, it's funny. We talked about, like, how aggressive the Yankees should be, but how aggressive can you be when there's only six teams that are really out of the playoffs and that are going to be sellers?
Well, that's where it's, if you're on the fence, you should become a seller. The Tigers, and of course, I was at the game on Wednesday in Detroit. The Tarek Skubal started, about a half a dozen scouts there. It was fascinating to watch it. Obviously, not if you were a Tigers fan, and I've got plenty of them in my family that weren't happy about it. But it really was one of those moments where you saw all the attention there on the Detroit Tigers, and that game told you so much about where they're going. And of course, tonight, the Tigers scratch Casey Mize from his start. The Mets scratch Freddie Peralta from his start, understanding that things are imminently going to happen. And I think the Tigers realize where they're at. They've got, I think, fairly clear eyes at the direction of the franchise, and they should sell. So a team like the Marlins, who have been kind of a little bit of a hybrid approach here, they may keep some of their more important players that are around for the long term. Joe Mack, the catcher, comes to mind. Kyle Stowers, probably, in the outfield. But just about everyone else they should listen on. And even a team like the Nationals, they were doing a little bit of buy and sell, that trade with the Red Sox. So being opportunistic, I think, Pete, we're going to see it, and you would know much more about this than I would, but it seems to me that we might be headed for more of an NBA-style trade deadline where it's need-for-need, buyer-for-buyer type trades, where it's just a good baseball trade, like what that Nationals-Red Sox trade was, as opposed to the binary, I'm a buyer, you're a seller, let's get together on this. It's different right now, and I think it speaks to exactly the point that you made very eloquently about just how many teams believe they're still in this thing.
Well, you know, it's funny because there's one team that's definitely not in it. It's the other team that's in New York. It's the New York Mets, and they've basically been out of it since, like, April. I mean, it has been a dumpster fire of a season for this team. And you talk about a franchise that was supposed to turn things around. 2024, they were on the cusp of, you know, making a deep run with Pete Alonso, going to the NLCS, losing to the Dodgers, the World Series champions. And then they missed the playoffs last year on a final day to the, out of all the teams, the Marlins. It's a shocker of all of them. And then this year, they're not even a blip on the radar. They are so done. They're fried. They're going to be active on the trade market. But like you just said, maybe is it crazy to think that David Stearns is plotting towards, I have assets, maybe I get major league ready players for the next year rather than just prospect heavy?
Right. I think that's a good point. I mean, I've always said this, Pete, that at the trade deadline, teams will tell you a lot based on who they move and then the levels of the players that they get back. If the Mets trade Francisco Lindor for three guys out of the rookie complex league, then they're basically signaling that they're going to have something of a rebuild. Now, I don't expect them to do that, but if you're going down to the lowest levels of the minor leagues where you can find maybe some overlooked players and players that are getting ready to pop that no one's really noticed before, then you could do it. But I'll tell you what, the Mets, I do believe that this may be a hot take to have it on WFAN tonight. They have some pieces that are better than their record indicates. I think overall, A.J. Ewing is a good ball player. He's got a good future. Is he a super-duper star? Not necessarily. He's a good complementary player. And talking about Lindor, his OPS plus is 100, which means he's exactly league average. He is supposed to produce at a higher level than that, which is one of the many reasons why earlier I said I don't see the Yankees getting him. It's just there are other places they can go for that need. I think they miss Nimmo's presence. They miss Alonso's presence. Polanco has given them very little. That was a really horrible miscalculation on the part of the front office, I think, in a lot of different ways. So they made some bad mistakes last offseason. They do have some pieces of a good team. Juan Soto still leads. Basically, he's one of the best hitters in Major League Baseball. Yeah. So there are still some good parts of this team. But the parts that are not working, you either need to replace them if you can, or, unfortunately, you've got to spend your way out of your mistakes by investing more and more this offseason. And, of course, it's all happening at a time where we're talking a lot about labor relations and what that whole structure looks like. So that is where I would say that the Mets are one of those teams that, in the last couple of years, they have maybe tried to outspend some of their mistakes and miscalculations. If we get a salary cap, Pete, you're not going to be able to do that at all anymore.
No, and that's a scary, scary sight because they're in salary cap hell, basically, if there is a salary cap already. And they need to buy themselves out of contracts because we've looked at across this team right now. Jorge Polanco, you can't deal with this again. Bo Bichette's going to opt out most likely, but Marcus Semien, like here's the rub, right? Like I was okay with the Brandon Nimmo being traded away, but Marcus Semien coming in and being basically a nothing at second base. You're wasting potential from A.J. Ewing. Could have been called up sooner, maybe played second base. Maybe there was somebody else to go out and get. But, you know, we're looking at a team right now that is so the biggest need was starting pitching, and that was barely touched. It was Freddie Peralta added to what we had last year already, and that was a huge mistake. Not because Freddie Peralta wasn't consistent of a five and fly type of guy. It's because the five innings have been awful this season that he pitches. And basically, you know, David Stearns is going to trade him away for basically a bag of dirt.
Well, a couple of things. Number one, Peralta would not be the first player to come to New York and not really be able to perform there. And that's
why is that, John? John, why is that? Why do they come to the Mets and just all of a sudden fail?
I don't think we have enough time, Pete, to be able to cover that in the course of this segment. But what I will say is this. There are teams out there that see the way that the ball is still coming out of his hand pretty well. I mean, there's a belief that his problems would be fixable in the right circumstance. There's been a report about the Cubs having interest. Of course, Council had him in Milwaukee. I think that's something that's worth keeping an eye on as well, is that potential and possibility. The other part that you alluded to, I'm not convinced that Bo Bichette is going to opt out. I'm not convinced. He may, but when you look at his numbers, I mean, he's more than 150 points down in OPS from where he was last year. I just don't know that he's going to do any better than what he's got coming to him in New York, unless things are to the point where he doesn't want to be there anymore, which only Bo can answer that for himself. If I were looking at it, though, with just a very clear and objective, dispassionate view, I would not advise him to opt out because I do not see at all that he would do better than what he's got coming from the Mets in the next 2 years.
Yeah, and he did say that. He's like, I signed a 3-year deal with this team. I plan on staying for 3 years. And that's a nice sentiment. I like that he said that. It makes me feel good. But I don't need to feel good. I need to see production. And right now, I don't see enough production. In your opinion, John Morosi, again, MLB Network, Baseball Insider, who is gone from the Mets that we don't expect? Like, we expect all the relievers to go. We expect Freddie Peralta to go. Is there somebody that we are just like, oh, that guy would not even on my radar, but wow, he's going to be gone?
You know, it's a good question. I think, first and foremost, this is the type of a situation where I think everything's going to be on the table. I would also say that to use the most obvious case, number one, you may have a different manager next year. There's a pretty good chance you will. And that person, is it Carlos Beltran? Is it Albert Pujols? There are people that they could bring in who might change the temperature in the room in a meaningful way. I think that might be Alex Cora. I think those types of names, I think, could do a lot of good for this particular group. But I think that a lot of the – first of all, you've got to address, I think, first base, although Jared Young has had some moments where he's been pretty good. You've got to address center field. Polanco, I'd be stunned if he comes back. I think Semien, you could easily see maybe he is not back either. Again, Bichette, I think he will opt in and stay there. The rest of the team, there are not that many guys. Maybe you would say Devin Williams would surprise people if he's not back. But when you look at it, if you watch this team every day, Pete, how many players do you watch every day and say, this guy's got to still be on my team next year? I've got to have this guy. I mean, it's probably Soto. Okay, Soto, you can't really move him. Ewing is a young player that's going to be around for a while. But aside from those, and McLean, I would say, is going to have to still be there for a while. I mean, who else? I mean, there's so much. There are so many players for whom you cannot say for sure they're coming back. Yes, if you keep more than half the roster and you have a new manager, it's a different vibe. All those things could be true. But I don't think a lot of people are going to be doing their exit interviews saying, oh, I know I'm back on opening day next year. I think this is one of those years where David Stearns and his team are going to have to basically take in every suggestion from anybody, from WFAN to the other 29 teams, about how to make this team better.
Yeah, well, Francisco Alvarez is the one guy I think that there's.
I would add him too. Yes, he's got to stay. He's got to stay.
Which is crazy because the demand for a catcher is out there right now. You're talking about the Yankees need a catcher. You're talking about the Red Sox need a catcher. I mean, there's plenty of teams looking for a catcher. Alvarez would bring you a hole. No?
Right. But it's a good point. But this becomes the next question, which is, we talked about the potential of a salary cap. We talked about the number of problems they have. And in the same point I made about the Yankees 5 minutes ago applies here, which is it's a question of priority. You can't fix everything perfectly all the time. You're going to have to live with imperfections in your roster. And you don't have unlimited capital. It's close to it, but it's not unlimited. And also, the other part of a team when you're kind of in a wounded state at the major league level, one of the things that I believe is important to start restoring a little bit of confidence and rhythm to the organization is promoting from within, which is why, again, Ewing is someone who's important to this team. He's got some energy. I like the way he plays. Benj does some things, too, that I like, sort of in an isolated way. Mm-hmm. So you've got some pieces from within that have come up. That's important. You need to show, because it's not just the Major League team. The way the Major League team operates sets the tone for everybody else. And when you're at AAA, AA, Single A, and you're seeing guys advance and graduate to the next level, it shows those people who are all around your organization that there's a pathway to success. Look how quickly it's happened for the White Sox. Look how quickly it's happened for the Twins, who are now a buyer after last year basically trading their entire team. So it can happen now. It's a different division. I get that. But the point there is, with the right young players and the right leadership, it can happen quickly. And so I would say, do not despair. You've got to set a better tone, I think, from manager on down. And then I think a lot of the homegrown pieces, I believe, will rise to the occasion better in 2027.
John Morosi with us for a few more minutes. John, who's more of a disappointment this year, the Mets or the Blue Jays?
Ooh, wow, that's a good one. I would say the Blue Jays, just because when you get to within a foot of winning it all, and then you're a seller the next year, that's just such a precipitous drop that I think it aches them a bit more. I think the Mets fans, let's put it this way. When the season started, the Blue Jays fans, Canadians everywhere, still love this team. They love the players. They love the people. They love the atmosphere. They were in love with their Blue Jays, celebrating 50 years of Blue Jays baseball in Toronto. Very special. A lot of romance there. I think a lot of Mets fans probably were in Port St. Lucie in spring and then City Field on opening day thinking, there's no Alonso. There's no Nimmo. There's no Diaz. I'm losing some guys that I know and like. they weren't sure about this team to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were, I just think the Mets fans, they were a little more prepared to have their hearts broken than the Blue Jays fans were. The Blue Jays fans believed they were going to get there again with another chance to win it all, and it just hasn't happened. And so I think that there's a greater disappointment now. I also think the Blue Jays situation is a little bit more fixable. It's the Vladdy thing, though, is a mystery. I mean, his power is totally gone, much like Raleigh's power has been gone in Seattle.
Austin Wells has more home runs than Vlad Guerrero Jr. It's crazy.
Right. It just, none of it, Pete, none of it makes sense. And you've had your fair share of calls about Austin Wells this season. I just think there's a lot of, there's just a lot of questions right now about the Jays. I think there's more questions about the Mets. And the Jays situation, if Vladdy just bounces back and has a normal year next year, not even just a great year, but a normal year, then I think a lot of the issues the Jays have experienced, Addison Barger's injury, and again, losing Bo was the thing. I mean, he may have not had great numbers with the Mets this year, and he missed some time last year with the Jays. There were some defensive shortcomings that he had at shortstop, all those things. It's all real. But he meant something to that team.
Right,
and I think they have missed Bo Bichette. At least they missed the 2025 Bo Bichette in 2026.
No question. John Morosi, a couple more questions for you. Quick rapid fire here. Tarik Skubal, where does he go?
The Dodgers have the best chance. They've got the deepest prospect pool, and they've got the greatest demonstrated ability to make trades like this in the past. And so I do think that at the moment they are the favorites. But do not rule out Rays and Brewers.
How about Rafael Devers? Where does he go?
Oof, that's a great question. I think he's probably going to stay put. I think the Giants would like to move his salary. It clearly hasn't worked out, and obviously now it's two teams that are a little frustrated with Devers, which tells you probably more about the player than it does about the team. I think they would like to move him. But I just don't know which team at this point would rush to take him at that contract. Man, I think he probably stays put in San Francisco.
All right, so then who after Tarik Skubal? Who's the biggest name that gets traded?
Good question. I think there'll be a good group, a good class of pitchers who move. I don't think Mason Miller is going to get moved, but there's a pretty robust next group of pitchers, and Peralta's one of them. Peralta's still a big name. I realize he's not having a great year. But Peralta's a player that I think will move and get a good return. And then on the offensive side, Hunter Goodman's an all-star. And I do believe the Rockies, with new leadership there, will trade Hunter Goodman. And if Goodman goes to the Yankees will have a very good chance to win the American League East, especially with the latest injury news for Shane McClanahan and the Rays. One of the many reasons why the Rays need to try to answer by acquiring Tarik Skubal before the Dodgers make that big-time play for him.
Wow. John Morosi, great stuff. MLB Network. We'll definitely have you on to talk a little hockey at some point in time, too, because I need to know what the hell's going on with the Rangers. Are they going to have a bounce-back season? Because that was awful, too.
It was. Dorofeyev, that was a good player. That was a nice trade they made there with Vegas. I'm a little bit bullish still on the Rangers. I think that they'll have their chance to get back into it. But I look forward to it every time, Pete. And listen, Monday morning will be up early, 9 a.m. Eastern time. Our live coverage starts on MLB Network. It is our Super Bowl, my friend. Trade deadline Monday. We'll be on for 15 straight hours of baseball talk. So join us over there.
Let's make sure it's active, though, because I can't have all this hype and no trade. So MLB's got to step up. They got to make some moves. Let's go.
All right. So what I'll do is I'll wake up that morning, like 7 a.m., and I'll send a text to all 30 GMs that says, Pete at WFAN needs action today. You got it? We need action.
That's right, John. Well, thank you so much, John Morosi. Appreciate it, man. Again,
have a great weekend. Thank you.
You too. 9 a.m. on Monday on MLB Network. Looking forward to that. We'll take a quick break. 888-808-1019. Dive into what John was saying about the trade deadline as well. Again, trade deadline talk all night long. If you want to talk some football, you're more than welcome to as well. But a lot of trade talk as the Mets and Yankees are going to be active at this deadline. 888-808-1019. It's Pete Hoffman with you on The Fan. Hit me up at Hoff, WFAN.